This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by the Smitten Kitten, non-toxic quality sex toys and supplies. Visit smittenkittenonline.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. I just returned from two glorious weeks in Maui, where I snorkeled, I swam with sea turtles, I whale watched from a kayak, I ate great food, and I hung out with queer family. It was fantastic, and I feel very well rested and excited to be back live with all of you, my listeners. We have got a jam-packed hour today talking about feminism, sexuality, and pornography with four fabulous feminist scholars. And because we're live, that means we're taking your calls. You can give us a call at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. You can also post your questions and comments on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio or on Facebook.com/AskTristan. If you call or post a question tonight and I use it on the air, you have a chance to win a pair of tickets to Pornopalooza at Cinekink in New York City on Saturday, March 2nd. Those tickets will get you into an entire afternoon of great events at the film festival, including the Feminist Porn Show, which is hosted by me, the Feminist Porn Panel, and Bring It, a showcase of the best of adult films. Later in the show, I'm going to talk to Claire Potter about an exciting event that's also happening in New York City next week at the New School. But first, I am so thrilled that the new book that I co-edited is now out on bookstore shelves. It's called The Feminist Porn Book, The Politics of Producing Pleasure. It brings together for the first time writing by feminists in the adult industry and research by feminist porn scholars. This book investigates not only how feminists understand pornography, but also how feminists do porn. That is, direct, act in, produce, and consume one of the world's most lucrative and growing industries. Today on the show, my co-editors are joining me to talk about it. So let me tell you a little bit about them. Celine Perenis Shimizu teaches film and performance theory and production as a professor of Asian American, comparative literature, feminist studies, and film and media studies at the University of California at Santa Barbara, also known as UCSB. She is the author of the award-winning book, The Hypersexuality of Race, Performing Asian American Women on Screen and Scene, and Straightjacket Sexualities, Unbinding Asian American Manhoods in the Movies. Her first documentary, Birthright: Mothering Across Difference, won Best Feature Documentary at the Big Mini DV Festival in 2009. Constance Penley is professor of film and media studies and co-director of the Carsey Wolf Center at UCSB. She is a founding editor of Camera Obscura, Feminism, Media, Cultural Studies, and editor or co-editor of the influential collections Feminism and Film Theory, Male Trouble, Technoculture, and The Visible Woman, Imaging Technologies, Science, and Gender. Her books include The Future of an Illusion, Film, Feminism, and Psychoanalysis, NASA Trek, Popular Science and Sex in America, and the forthcoming book, Teaching Pornography. Mireille Miller-Young is Associate Professor of Feminist Studies at UCSB. She researches and teaches about race, gender, and sexuality in popular culture and the sex industries. Her forthcoming book, A Taste for Brown Sugar, Black Women, Sex Work, and Pornography, will be published by Duke University Press. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Constance, Celine, and Mireille.
Thank you.
Hi, Tristan.
Hey.
So, Celine, let's start out. Why don't you give us some background on how our book project came about?
Well, Constance Penley, Mireille Miller-Young, and I are all porn professors at UC Santa Barbara. And, of course, we know Tristan through many venues. Tristan and I spoke together at the Yale Journal of Law and Feminism Conference on Prostitution and Pornography. But, of course, your work is very well known in terms of making feminist porn in a mainstream venue, like for Vivid. And there was a conference, Consoling Passions, which is the premier conference on television and media, which was hosted by UC Santa Barbara and the film and media department there. And we had a very productive conversation, and we went from there.
And how many years ago was that? Because I can't even remember now when it was.
I think it was about 5 years ago. Connie, do you remember?
I think it was more like 7 years ago.
Oh my God. Okay,
so what we did was we put together for Consoling Passions this feminist media conference, a panel called Sex Work in Industry and Academe. And the idea was to be able to have a panel that would be women in the adult industry, feminists in the adult industry, and us, feminist porn scholars. And we wanted it to be very much a question. That's one of the things that I certainly hated the most about anti-porn feminism has been the way it divided women, where we were supposed to go and save our poor, victimized porn sisters. So what we wanted to do for Consoling Passions and what kickstarted this whole project, the feminist porn book, was putting us in conversation on that panel and now in the book.
And Constance, you've been teaching pornography as a film genre to undergrads for a very long time, which you write about in your essay for the book. But why do you think that porn is still so controversial in university settings and within scholarship?
I think it was, well, I am now entering my 20th year of teaching pornography at UC Santa Barbara in the Film and Media Studies Department. And at first, sure, there was a lot of controversy, but now not only is my course a course like any other course, well, not quite, but there's also close to 50 other courses now taught around the country. What's unique about my class, though, is that I think I'm just about the only one who teaches it as a straight film and media studies class. It really is a film and media history and theory class.
And so you teach it as a genre rather than teaching it in a sort of more politically charged, like in the feminist studies department, say.
Yes, and I was in the feminist studies department. I was 50% in the feminist studies department when I first started teaching the course. And I decided that if I wanted people to be able to study it, to be informed about it before they started making their opinions about it, feminist or otherwise, I had to teach it in the film and media studies department.
Mireille, Connie talked about kind of how this first panel that we were all on was about bringing together scholars and industry people. And that's really what we try to do in the book, is really put these porn scholars and academics and porn performers and producers in conversation with one another. Why do you feel like that's so important?
Yeah, I mean, I think Constance is right. It has to do partly with trying to transform the ways in which feminists engage pornography, which is often really about, you know, making a very strong political charge against it as a kind of cultural production that harms women. You know, many feminists have historically associated it with a form of violence against women. But in doing so, in analyzing, you know, pornography, they rarely actually talked to the people who were performing in it. And they ended up kind of associating a certain identity to them, like an identity of women who were just really exploited and not really aware of their exploitation, really, you know, and not really articulate about their experiences. They just kind of ceded that terrain and in order to make their critique. And I think that, what separates other feminists like ourselves, who are actually really curious about, you know, these questions of identity and questions of performance and questions of sexual labor politics, is precisely what those feminists leave out, is, you know, what are women and men doing on the ground and how do they experience it and how do they try to kind of transform pornography from the inside? And so our project is precisely to talk to those people who are being ignored. In the process, we found have a lot to say, and that a lot of people want the chance to, you know, it's sad that we had to limit the book, because I think there's a lot of people who would like to be in it, who really, you know, want to tell the world exactly what their experience is and let people know that, you know, there's aspects of pornography that they find useful, that they find sometimes empowering, that they find as a form of survival, that they find is erotic. And there's also other aspects of pornography that they find problematic and that they have really important critiques to make. And if we're interested in all in kind of making a better pornography and enhancing people's lives who are sex workers in the industry, then we should be listening to them.
Right, exactly. And I think that that's a crucial kind of piece of what the mission of our book is. We've got a question on Facebook from Paulina, who wants to know, what's the difference between feminist porn and mainstream porn? Who wants to tackle that?
I think this is Celine, and I'd like to address it. I think this is one of the central questions that we're asking in the book, is why do feminists want to invest in pornography as a way to express their desires, as a way to express their practices? And I think this is really what the book is about. I think that's one of the most central questions that we're asking. And I think it's because feminists on the ground, like Murray says, are really struggling to find ways to see themselves, to validate themselves and their sexual practices and their sexual identities. And so they invest in making these sexual images so that they can create an archive or a history of how they live, to create a version of the way they see the world on screen. And when you represent yourself in such an intimate way, it's a way to reach out to others, to create a community, and to make these desires, you know, have a space in our society. So I think that's a really big difference, that there's a very social and very political reason why many of the people that we include in our book are engaging in the sexual representation that is pornography.
And I would just like to add to that, this is Mireille, you know, what Celine said is all very true. And what we were discovering in this book is the importance of speaking to the kind of early progenitors of, you know, what we're calling feminist pornography. People like Candida Royale and Betty Dodson, for example, who, you know, like others like Annie Sprinkle, have been creating since, you know, the 70s and 80s, and creating this kind of alternative archive of women-made pornography. And, you know, it's really interesting to kind of think about what the differences are. And we are opening up space for a lot of different interpretations in our book. I think we're not trying to say that feminist porn is one thing. My colleagues are saying we're trying to say that it's a question what it is. And it's like mainstream pornography, it's pretty hard to define. But some of the aesthetics and politics that we're interested in is this question of how it invites a kind of community of women, and as well as non-gender conforming or other kind of non-heteronormative communities into the conversation, how it tries to disrupt the traditional way in which much of cinema has been seen to be really for a male gaze, and so trying to think about what other gazes might be possible. And then there's another aspect of really trying to be ethical about the process of making porn. So how do you treat your workers, your performers specifically, your crew, in ways that are not exploitative and are really hold true to feminist values for social justice? And those are some of the aspects that, you know, starting out really looking at what distinction that porn.
Okay, we've got to take a break, but all of this is stimulating lots of conversation on Facebook, so keep those questions coming. We're going to get to them once we just take a moment to hear from our fabulous sponsors who make this show possible. So stay with us. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to tristan@puckerup.com. That's tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today I am talking with the co-editors of the new book, The Feminist Porn Book, Mireille Miller-Young, Constance Penley, and Celine Perenis-Shimizu. People ask me all the time, where can I find feminist porn? And guess what? My awesome sponsor, The Smitten Kitten, has an incredible selection. So if you want to see video on demand, or if you want to get DVDs that are from a curated collection of really great progressive feminist porn, check out smittenkittenonline.com. And you can use the coupon code Tristan to get 20% off your entire order. So before the break, we were talking about how, in fact, this book is attempting to answer the question, what is feminist porn? What's the difference between feminist porn? And we have this question on Facebook from Krista, who says, what would you say is the relationship between feminist porn and porn for women? I ask because I've seen some porn that is marketed as porn for women, and I found it to be too soft and just missing a lot of the things that I think make porn really hot. So can we have porn for men, and can that also be feminist porn? Great and complex question. Who wants to tackle this one? Well, I'll tackle it. Okay. I'll tackle
it. Yes, you sound like you're the best for this.
Part of the thing is about porn for women, and we discuss porn for women a lot in the book because, like Mireille said, it was a category that was developed before the category we call feminist porn, and it definitely influences and overlaps and is part of feminist porn. I understand the critique, which has been made by many people, that so-called porn for women really has high production values and great lighting and wonderful music and storyline, but the sex is too soft and too gentle. It's like the kinder, gentler pornography, which can be problematic, not just for pleasure's sake, not just because you can't get off to it, but also because it does kind of reflect and reinforce this idea that what women want in sex and in porn is something softer, which is true for some women and not for others. So I think that the relationship between feminist porn and porn for women is a complex one. And I certainly think that nowadays there's a lot more selection, and you can get some incredibly hardcore sex that still has feminist ideals behind it and has a feminist mission behind it. So I think of, for example, some of the BDSM porn made by Madison Young. I think of my own series, Rough Sex, which is very kinky and has an edge to it, but is still feminist. And I think of some of the people working in mainstream porn like Kimberly Kane and Bobby Starr and Belladonna, who are making pretty explicit XXX material, but that has a really big female pleasure component to it.
I do believe that there is a space for this diversity of pornography that aims to address what women may need or want. But in my understanding of porn for women, what I find limiting about it, you know, the soft lighting seems to equate to a very limited idea of what women are supposed to want. And what I like about feminist porn is not only that diversity in defining what women want, but also the confrontation with what may be difficult. So an example would be, you know, is racial representation in porn always already damaging? You know, many times in the anti-porn movement, the idea of a racial representation in pornography is really held up as the victimizing, you know, work, victimizing porn. But what I like about feminist porn, including your work, Tristan, is the way in which it's unafraid to talk about is pleasure possible across inequality. I just love that the work tries to answer that.
Well, and your work, Celine, you know, really tackles these intersections of race, gender, class, and sexuality. And I wonder if you might comment on what you think the sort of state of the representation of Asian Americans are in the current crop of mainstream porn.
Well, you know, I'm coming from my little hole here where I'm obsessed, of course, with the work of Kenny Stiles, who's the first heterosexual Asian porn star. He's lauded as that. And I'm so interested in what he's doing now on Tumblr in helping other Asian American or Asian men who want to break into porn by inviting them to post pictures of themselves, you know, in a sense, to audition, you know, and to see, to express why it is they want to be in pornography. And so I think there's something really interesting, really powerful that I'm trying to figure out, because, you know, there's this history of the Asian American or Asian male as falling short of the criteria of what we call attractive and desirable. And here, in their own ways, you know, they are representing images of their chest, and some of it, you know, looks like the traditional normative, like sexy guy, super ripped, and some of it looks not quite. But so I think there's a lot of potentiality there for Asian American or Asian men to express what they consider desirable, how they themselves are desiring of others. So try to figure it out, Tristan, but it's very, very interesting. And there's a lot going on. Just, you know, looking at what Kenny Stiles is doing on Tumblr. It's called luckyasianguy.com is a good way of finding what he's doing.
Okay. And Constance, did you want to add something to what Celine said at the top?
Oh, well, I just wanted to say about the feminist porn book that we're not saying this is feminist porn. What I think that this collection is doing is bringing together feminists who are studying porn and feminists who are producing porn. And it's a conversation about how does a feminist go about studying porn? What would be a feminist analysis of porn? How would a feminist go about producing porn? And so a lot of the very diverse set of definitions, of working definitions that the people in this volume come up with, I think are you can see people thinking, you know, what is it? There's nobody in here, I find, that's really dogmatic about, you know, this content has to be there if it's going to be feminist porn. This method of production has to be there if it's going to be feminist porn. But it's, and this is the one and only kind of feminist analysis that one could have of porn. No, it's very much questioning, you know, what is the relation of feminism and pornography?
And someone recently tweeted to me that she believed that Gayle Dines and other anti-porn feminists, based on their writing and the talks they give, don't know that feminist porn exists. And I gently corrected that idea. But Constance, why do you believe that Dines so easily dismisses feminist porn?
It's easy to dismiss if you willfully ignorant of its existence. I mean, this has often been the case. I mean, back in the day, McKinnon and Dworkin wouldn't really debate other feminists. And so I think the same thing's going on here. The only thing that anti-porn feminism can do is ignore the actuality of feminist porn producers and feminist porn scholarship, you know, and in its place, they construct these, shall we say, straw women, you know, their description of some kind of capital P pornography that is monolithic and is one thing. It's just, you know, men doing horrible things to women who are victimized by all this. And instead, what we're looking at is, I call it like small p, lowercase pornographies, and, you know, really trying to get at what it consists of, as both a genre and industry, a mode of production, a mode of distribution. And so our scholarship and our production in no way matches what the anti-porn feminists are arguing against.
So in some ways it just goes against their whole concept. And so because it doesn't fit in, they sort of put blinders on and say, we don't even want to deal with that because it will contradict, you know, our nice, safe, little neat box that we've created that says this porn, this is porn and it's all bad.
Oh, yes.
Can I jump in, Connie, after you're done? Go ahead.
No, I just, yes, they want to attribute just false consciousness to us. We're just deluded, co-opted by the adult industry, and for scholars, you know, all we're doing is writing about safe things that are just going to get us tenure. And, you know, pornography happens to be a hot academic topic now. And so in other words, and of course, the performers have no positive agency at all. So everybody is deluded, according to the anti-porn feminists. Except them, of course.
You're right.
Yeah, no, I mean, Connie's pretty much said it, but I think it is really actually unfortunate because for me, feminist porn represents actually the potential of their critique, like played back. And what I mean is that they are critical of the way in which porn exploits women. So why not look at the way in which women are exploiting pornography and, you know, doing something that is very much about changing the power dynamics and the way porn is made and the way in which it is operated. And, I mean, I think that they're missing an opportunity to actually see what women are doing, which further takes away women's agency in this. And it's really actually, you know, kind of funny. And I'm looking forward to what Dines and the rest of them are going to say about our book, because I feel like we present really irrefutable evidence that they're not actually based in reality and that they're really speaking about something in a pretty narrow way, as you guys were saying, with blinders on.
Okay, we've got to take another break. We've got lots of questions to get to on Facebook, but first we've got to take a break and hear from our sponsors, including Astroglide. Astroglide personal lubricants make sex better. Get a free sample, find out how, at astroglide.com. Stay with us. More on feminist porn, more Sex Out Loud when we return.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Experience love with a little help from nature's soothing ingredients with Astroglide Natural Personal Lubricant. This all-natural and botanical formula lets you get in touch with your wild side, all while keeping it green. Astroglide Natural Personal Lubricant is glycerin, paraben, and alcohol-free, and it's made with aloe vera, vitamins C and E, and chamomile. But with the same second-only-to-nature feel that you get with your regular Astroglide. Visit astroglide.com to get your free sample and start hitting it green between the sheets today.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today I'm talking to the co-editors of the feminist porn book, Celine Perenes-Shimizu, Mireille Miller-Young, and Constance Penley. And you guys are on fire on Facebook. I don't even know if I'm going to get to all your questions. But first I want to do a shout out to one of my other sponsors, WeVibe, which is the world's best-selling couples vibrator. WeVibe also has been expanding their toy line rapidly. So not only do they have the WeVibe, but they have got a lot of other products out there, and they're all really good. Go to we-vibe.com to find out all about them. So another question from Facebook comes from Ryan M. who says, feminist porn concepts are what generally appeal to me most in porn, but they're rarely found in the mainstream. How might feminist porn be likely to positively influence and change mainstream porn for the better?
Oh, this is Connie. I'll take that. I think that one of the things that's strong about our collection is that it demonstrates that there's not something separate to call feminist porn, and then there's mainstream porn. Because many of the practitioners that we have are working in mainstream porn. I mean, you, Tristan, I mean, you work for big companies, Vivid, Evil Angel. You're making work that comes from inside. And then, of course, we have the more alternative, independent. You know, it's just like any other industry. It's going to have an independent branch, too, an experimental branch. So I think that it's people inside the industry, and also it's people more on its countercultural edges who are all trying to make better porn.
No, that's a great point. And I also think that this brings up the issue again of labor and of women's interventions, which makes me think of your piece in the book, Mireille. Your work tackles these issues of race and racism, but also places an emphasis on labor, especially among African American women. I'm wondering if you could talk more about what you see as African American women's roles in creating pornography.
Yeah, so, I mean, I agree with what Connie's saying in that, you know, that we have to look at what people are doing within the mainstream, but and that feminist porn is one aspect of a larger industry. But I'm really excited in that vein by Black women. My focus is on Black women who are working both inside the industry and on its edges. To really push back at some of the normative representations of Black female sexuality, which are really rooted in these historical concepts, these stereotypes about Black women as being hypersexual, animalistic, having a kind of degraded sexuality, a sexuality that seems to be as less valuable and desirable than white women and other women of color. And what I'm seeing in the producers who are both performers turned directors, people like Vanessa Blue or Diana DeVoe, as well as people who were coming from the outside, from a kind of film background or sex education background, like Nina and Shine Louise Houston, is that they're really incredible, productive work that's trying to question this logic about Black female sexuality and open up this kind of new potentials for thinking about Black female sexuality in much more complex ways. But that said, as someone who's interested in labor and commodification practices, although I'm very much excited by the potentials that feminist porn offers, we haven't resolved this really important question about commodification because it is a for-profit industry. And so we are participating, you know, de facto in the politics of labor exploitation when we do that. Now, I think that what is progressive about feminist porn, because it's rooted in a feminist politics, is that it's seeking ways to kind of get outside of that or challenge that by being ethical in the way we treat workers and how we hire them, what we pay them, what their working experience is like. But we haven't really solve that problem because it's still a for-profit business. And I feel that, you know, it's especially visible when you're talking about the performers turned directors who are very much still trying to find a way to direct in ways that enhance their own benefit as personas in the industry. You know, they're still sex workers in a way, and we have to also think about feminist porn directors and creators as being involved in labor. And we have to really grapple with the fact that our feminism and our cultural representations are necessarily political and necessarily tied to capitalism. And we really can't get outside of that problematic because it is really what defines all of our popular culture. Now, that said, anti-porn feminists want to say that feminist porn is an oxymoron. I was just reading that on Twitter right now. You know, feminist porn is an oxymoron because it's still commodification. And I think that we shouldn't see that, you know, we're asking that question, how do we get outside of it, how do we push it, and we can't just foreclose the possibility that our porn and alternative porn can be challenge commodification, can think about the ways in which people use commodification differently, can be anti-capitalist, can be anti-racist. And that, you know, that is what I'm really concerned with thinking and making sure that we, as much as we're shining a light on the possibilities of feminist porn, that we're also, you know, being really importantly critical of ourselves and what we're doing as feminists working on or creating pornography.
Yeah, and I think that one of the places to investigate that, Mireille, is in how the internet has shifted the actual economy. So what that brings up for me when you talk about it is cam girls, is performers who run their own websites and who make all the money from creating the content on their websites, amateur couples who have their own porn websites and memberships, that people are now learning how to control the means of production. So not only are they controlling the representation, that they're also getting a significant portion of the profits when that wasn't really an option for people 20 years ago to do. And it is an option for people now.
Absolutely. I think that thinking about the new distribution models that are happening online are really exciting places to think about how people outside of these big companies are really interested in displaying their own material and really controlling the means of production. And it's really an exciting way to think about how new technologies may allow us to do very kind of politically progressive work that challenges you know, normal forms of kind of capitalist labor exploitation. And I think a lot of people are giving away, you know, stuff for free and kind of really interested in the educational aspect about it, are really interested in the community aspect. But none of this this all happens at the same time. Like, you may have a for-profit feminist business that's also doing other progressive things, like really involved in like queer sex education. And that's what is, you know, the kind of conflicts in all this is, like, looking at both happening at the same time. Like, we live in a society where, you know, corporate capitalism and neoliberalism is predominant. And so there's very few spaces where you can actually get outside of that. But I think that we should be reminding ourselves of all the progressive things that are happening, too. And so I just was saying all that because I was struck by this comment on Twitter about it being about feminist porn being an oxymoron, and I think it's a taste of some of the response that we will get for our book. But I'm excited. I welcome that. I welcome that debate. I hope people bring it to us, and I hope they read the book and see the real critical lens that is operating in the collection.
I really want to echo what Mireille is saying. I think that you know, that assessment that we have to be outside of capitalism or outside of the industry, it's really not how it is. I think one of the most exciting things about the book is that we're offering people a method of being able to look at the different kinds of resistances that people are offering, even in the most mainstream kind of porn. I think a crucial idea is, or a crucial practice for us as viewers, is to not already decide that porn means something certain, but to actually look at what's happening, you know, inside the work.
And we are almost out of time. Connie, do you have one final thought?
I was just trying to think about this idea of the relation between feminist porn and mainstream porn, and the fact that some of the feminist pornographers are in mainstream porn. And so I was thinking about your relation to it, Tristan. And I was thinking, I think you might be the Catherine Bigelow of adult.
I don't even, I've got to sleep on that one.
Zero Dark 38.
Right. Yeah. Zero Dark 38. Of course. I might be the Catherine. Okay. I've got to think on that. We've got to analyze that, Connie. But thank you so much for being here and talking about the book, Constance, Celine, and Mireille. We are going to talk about this much more and hope you will join us and meet us at the Feminist Porn Conference. You can find out all about the Feminist Porn Book at thefeministpornbook.com. There you will also find information and links to Constance Penley, Celine Perenes-Shimizu, and Mireille Miller-Young on social media. Coming up next, we will talk to Professor Claire Potter about a symposium and exhibition at the New School that celebrates the 50th anniversary of the publication of The Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe. Share the pleasure.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Hey, are you enjoying the show? Well, there's something you might enjoy even more, and that is this fantastic event called Catalyst Con East, which is a three-day conference that was created to inspire exceptional conversations in sexuality. They've got over 70 speakers presenting over 40 sessions on topics like body image, sex toys, erotic writing, and even slut shaming. It's open to everyone, and it's going to be held at the Crystal City Marriott near Reagan National Airport in March. The tickets are almost sold out, but you can still register by going to catalystcon.com. If you use the coupon code Tristan, you get $10 off your registration. On to our next topic. So The Feminine Mystique by Betty Friedan was first published in 1963, and it's considered one of the most influential books of the 20th century and a significant spark of second wave feminism. In it, Friedan critiqued the notion that women, especially white middle-class women, were completely fulfilled through marriage, motherhood, and housework. She challenged widespread cultural norms around gender and advocated for women to find meaning and self-actualization through education and career. REACT, The Feminine Mystique at 50, is a symposium and exhibition at the New School that celebrates the 50th anniversary of the book's publication. Claire Potter is the co-organizer of the event. Claire Potter has been professor of history at the New School for Public Engagement since 2012, and prior to that, she worked at Wesleyan University, where we first met. She's currently writing a political history of anti-pornography campaigns called Sex in Public, Feminism, the Reagan Revolution, and the Politics of Pornography, 1968 to 2000, which is due to be completed in 2014. With Renee Romano, she edits a series called Since 1970, Histories of Contemporary America for the University of Georgia Press. Since 2007, she has written the infamous blog Tenured Radical, which moved to the Chronicle of Higher Education in July of 2011. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Claire.
Well, thank you, Tristan. It's nice to be here.
So this two-day symposium at the New School is happening next week in New York City that you co-organized. Tell me about some of the things that are going to happen in those 2 days.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we're really excited about it. As far as we know, it's the only event happening in New York to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Feminine Mystique. And we've got 2 days of events, talks, panels. There's going to be a great exhibition that has been put together by two New School students, Natalie Balthrop and Deborah Engel, who actually were the ones who got the idea of having this symposium in the first place. Susan Ware, who taught at NYU for many years and is now the editor of American National Biography, is going to come and give the keynote address on popular feminism. And we're going to have a number of great panels that start with the book and move outward, looking at homes, looking at designs. The panel that I'm running is on media. So we're going to begin with the Feminine Mystique and end up on the internet.
Great. And there's clearly a kind of a multidisciplinary approach to this event. So why do you think that that's so important?
Well, I think it's important because when the Feminine Mystique came out, it was really in the middle of a kind of media explosion, not just in terms of radio and television. I mean, really, in 1963, we're really sort of hitting the moment in which it becomes normal to have a television in your home. So Betty Friedan, as a popular author, sort of hits a moment when it's possible to be on any number of media advertising your politics. And I actually think it's reasonable to think about the sort of conjunction of the birth of feminism and television, because people like Friedan and Gloria Steinem and all of these feminist stars are going on to television. But Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, comes out at a moment when all of a sudden actually there's a lot of interest in women and women and sex. So if you think about it, Friedan, who actually writes about sex a lot in The Feminine Mystique, that book comes out a year after Helen Gurley Brown's Sex and the Single Girl. So there's this moment in which all of a sudden a lot of people are kind of looking at women and saying, is this thing, what Friedan names the Feminine Mystique, this idea that all women want to get married and have children and stay home, is that for real?
And there's a new edition of the book, which also celebrates the 50th anniversary. Gail Collins wrote the introduction. She quotes Friedan in her introduction. She says, as she made the beds, shopped for groceries, matched slipcover material, ate peanut butter sandwiches with her children, chauffeured Cub Scouts and brownies, lay beside her husband at night, she was afraid to ask, even of herself, the silent question, is this all? And Collins then says, it sounds in retrospect a little whiny, but at the time it was an earth-shaking query, which makes me think, how is the Feminine Mystique still relevant today?
Well, I think some of the questions that Friedan was asking, or that Friedan was sort of translating from the survey she did, are still relevant today, because there's still this tremendous pull that women are experiencing between whether they're going to fulfill themselves in a career, whether they're going to fulfill themselves through parenthood, whether they are going to sort of give themselves over to what Friedan called togetherness. Okay, that's a huge theme of the feminine mystique, is Friedan's notion that marriage forces people into a kind of corporate body called the family. And Friedan argues that this is not only destructive to women, it's destructive to men, and it's destructive to children as well. The part about the book that is also worth mentioning, you know, these are questions that have not gone away, is, of course, a lot has changed. The book is, for example, very homophobic. One of the things Friedan blames on women's dilemma is the rise in homosexuality, for example, what she sees as the rise in homosexuality in the early 1960s, that children are being doted on by their mothers, and that their mothers are so absorbed in them that children don't actually know how to take care of themselves, develop themselves as full adult human beings, and so on. So, I think a lot of the questions are still relevant, and then I think people who go back to the feminine mystique are going to see a perfect little snapshot of Cold War America, where homosexuality is still wrong and shameful. And, you know, women are beginning to try to figure out who they're supposed to be and to whom.
And one of the things that's clear to me in putting together this symposium is that you've put second wave feminists like Susan Brownmiller and Susan Ware in conversation with third wave feminists, for example,
yeah.
The editor of feministing.com and
yep.
These new school undergrads.
Yep.
I'm wondering what you see as some of the major tensions between these generations.
Well, I think one of the things you see whenever you get second wave feminists up and talking is a reflection on what did and didn't work in the movement. And third wave feminists are much less concerned about that. One of the things I admire about someone like Samhita Mukhopadhyay, who is the executive editor of Feministing, or Nona Willis-Aronowitz, who is going to be on my panel, the daughter of Ellen Willis, the rock journalist. Part of what's great about them is they take what they need from second wave feminism and improve on it. You know, so that I think, you know, one obvious thing about the feminine mystique is it's all about middle-class white women. Third-wave feminism isn't all about middle-class white women. And yet, third-wave feminists like Samhita and Nona and have sort of taken some of those questions and rewritten them and mashed them up to address the issues that young women are dealing with today and the really heightened awareness of third wave feminists to issues of race and class and gender.
We are out of time, unfortunately, but thank you so much for telling us about this. I hope all of you out there who are in or near New York City make it to this event. React.
Thank you so much, Tristan. It's been a pleasure.
React, the Feminine Mystique at 50 Symposium and Exhibition, takes place February 22nd to 23rd at Parsons, the New School for Design. Go to thefemininemystique50, that's 50.wordpress.com, to find out all about it. To find out more about Claire, go to clairepotter.com. All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. Tune in next Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be Christopher Ryan talking about his new book, Sex at Dawn, How We Mate, Why We Stray, and What It Means for Modern Relationships. Until then, keep the discussion going on Facebook, on Twitter, and in your own life. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino. on Voice America Variety. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by the Smitten Kitten, non-toxic quality sex toys and supplies. Visit smittenkittenonline.com.